You are listening to AfterSight. This recording is intended solely for individuals who are blind or have low vision.
Thank you for joining us for Food and Stuff, read by Gretchen Miller, featuring smittenkitchen.com. Today we're going to do all desserts all the time. We're going to start with a toasted pecan cake. When it's quiet around here, it generally means one of two things. One, I've been cooking a series of duds, or certainly nothing good enough to clear my throat into this microphone and sing the praises of. Or two, we're heading for another episode of Just What Has Deb Gotten Herself Into This Time? See any Friendsgiving or wedding cake adventure? A couple of weeks ago was the former. Last week was resoundingly the latter. I took over the first night Seder, a ceremonial dinner on the first two nights of Passover, duties last year, instituted Harry Potter Haggadahs, and it was all going well until I got to planning this year's meal. Seemingly writing potatoes, carrots, onions, eggs, almonds on a grocery list over and over again. Decided that we needed to shake up the guest list a little. Really, I think I just miss my dad making bad jokes and trying to get us to stick even a tiny bit to the prescribed topic. And suddenly we were 17 plus a wait list. We definitely didn't have this many chairs or table space. My fridge and freezer were bursting at the seams, and I haven't even gotten into the part where a chef came over that morning to teach me a new dish that had nothing to do with Passover, but I promise something fun is coming. The whole week, I was a heady mix of panic and delight. Someone is going to tell me it's because I'm a Gemini, but truly the only thing that motivates me is being at the edge of a disaster, and that's where the bulk of this month has vanished to. In the middle of this, I made a new, wonderful cake. There are a lot of nutty cakes on this site. Macaroon torts are among my favorite, but also this hazelnut brown butter number and this almond intensity and this walnut cake, all with links at smittenkitchen.com. But most of them, macaroons aside, have the gluten and Passover inconvenience of just a little bit of flour. So when someone pointed out to me that this almond cake from Joan Nathan, I liked many things about it. It's utterly flourless. The ingredient list is short and straightforward. You're not going to end up with seven unused egg yolks, hallelujah. And a quick test run told me what we really want to know, which is that it's spectacularly moist and tender and keeps really well. But if I had to choose between eating an almond and eating a toasted pecan, I would never choose the former. And if I had to choose between eating a cake with vegetable oil over one with brown butter, well, what kind of question is that even? I added some needed salt, used vanilla instead of almond and cardamom, and then I heaped the cake with whipped cream and all the berries I could find, and the result is perfect, toasty, creamy, fresh, and pretty, and also approximately the only thing in my kitchen that was calm and running on schedule last week. I hope you've had a wonderful holiday weekend, however you celebrate, and I'm super happy to be back to my regularly scheduled nonsense when cooking food in less than 10-pound quantities feels like a vacation. Here we go. Toasted pecan cake. Servings, 8, generously. Time, 70 to 85 minutes. Source, adapted liberally from Joan Nathan via the NYT. I don't have cup measurements for pecans or pecan meal because it's just too inconsistent. Every cup of nuts will weigh something different depending on size and how many are broken, and nut meal is even more inconsistent as you can just pack and pack it, the weight getting higher and higher. So I don't want to mess this cake up for you with estimates. If you don't have a scale, please simply buy 1 pound and do your best to estimate what removing 1/16 would look like. Even if you're a smidge off, it will still be more accurate than cups here. If you'd like to make this cake dairy-free, just use 1/2 cup of vegetable or another neutral oil. You'll need 15 ounces or 420 grams of whole or chopped pecans or pecan meal slash flour. 1 cup or 200 grams of granulated sugar. 9 tablespoons or 130 grams of unsalted butter plus additional for the pan, 7 large eggs separated, 1 teaspoon of kosher salt, 1.5 teaspoons of vanilla extract or the seeds from half a bean, whipped cream and berries for garnish if you wish. You're going to heat the oven to 350 degrees Fahrenheit. Oil or butter a 9-inch round pan and set aside. I lined mine with parchment for easier removal. And while I don't expect it to stick much if you don't use parchment, I always think we're better safe than sorry. If you're starting with whole or chopped pecans, toast them. You're going to spread the nuts in one layer on a sheet tray, toast for 10 minutes, tossing once midway so that they cook evenly. They should smell nutty and appear one shade darker. Let them cool completely before using, and you can hasten this along in the fridge or freezer. Grind your pecans. Once they're cool, grind the nuts with sugar and salt in a food processor or a high-speed blender until finely chopped, but stop before they seem to glue together, i.e. they become nut butter. Set aside. Next, you're going to brown your butter. In a medium saucepan, melt the butter over medium heat. It will melt and then foam and then turn clear golden and finally start to turn brown and smell nutty. Stir occasionally, then frequently as it begins to take on color, scraping up any bits from the bottom as you do. Don't take your eyes off the pot, as while you may be impatient for it to start browning, the period between the time that the butter begins to take on color and the point where it burns is often less than a minute. As soon as the butter takes on a nutty color and smell, remove from the heat and pour into a large bowl to cool. You can hasten this along in the fridge or freezer, but keep an eye on it in the freezer especially, as you don't want it solidified. You're going to beat the egg whites until they form stiff peaks, but not beyond this point, when they might seem to have a dry and crumbly foam, and you're going to set them aside. At last, assemble the cake batter. Add the egg yolks and the vanilla to the cooled browned butter in the large bowl and whisk until thoroughly combined. Stir in pecan sugar salt mixture, or if you're starting with pecan meal or flour, stir it in along with the granulated sugar and salt. The batter will be very thick. You're going to add 1/3 of the whipped egg whites and stir to combine. This will help loosen the batter so it's easier to add the remaining whites. Add the remaining egg whites and gently, carefully fold them into the pecan mixture, trying not to deflate the egg whites. And then pour into a prepared cake pan and smooth the top. You're going to bake the cake until a toothpick inserted into the center comes out clean, about 35 to 40 minutes. Allow to cool for 10 minutes in the pan and then remove from the pan and let finish cooling on a rack. To finish, I swirled mine with 1 cup of heavy cream plus 2 tablespoons of granulated sugar and 1 teaspoon of vanilla extract softly whipped and piled it with berries and a few chopped pecans. It could also be finished simply with just a dusting of powdered sugar. As far as doing ahead, the cake keeps for 5 to 6 days in the fridge. Without cream, it doesn't need to be refrigerated, but if you'd like to have it more than 3 days, I think it's less prone to going bad if it is chilled. That is recipe number 1 for desserts. Next, we're going to have a recipe for cranberry pecan frangipane tart, and I apologize, I'm sure I'm pronouncing that incorrectly. Frangipane. I am the first to admit that I do not create nearly enough of my own recipes. Oh, I tweak, I adapt, I skip some things and add others, but I don't often decide that I want something enough to go out and find my own way to get there, which is a shame, because when I do, it's never nearly the disaster that I expect it to be. And when I do, it makes me happy. So Deb, as I was the only person in this room, let this be a lesson to you. Do this more often, okay? Case in point, vowing to give the fresh whole cranberry more of a spotlight this year, I had been trying to figure out what kind of tart could be made with it for weeks. But I kept coming back to the idea of burying them in some sort of custard or filling to offset how tart they'd be. I knew I liked the frangipane idea, but although I love almond paste tremendously, I've always thought plain ground almonds were rather dull. And this is anything but. Ground pecans, a little orange zest, a nip of brandy, and whole tart cranberries cooked until they slump, all filling out the great unshrinkable sweet tart shell, and we cannot keep our forks out of it. You know, cutting a little sliver, determining it an uneven cut, evening it out, repeating this until half that you were saving for others looks sorrier and sorrier. I don't know if this tart will be half as much of a hit in your house as it has been in our penthouse, ha ha ha. But if you don't like it, just call us. We'll be right over, slivering knife in hand. Here's the recipe for cranberry pecan, frangipane or frangipane tart. The problem, as if there could be one, with finding a tart shell that doesn't lose volume when baked is that you need to rejigger your fillings so they actually, well, fill things. I've scaled the recipe I used in the photos, which ended up only about two-thirds of the way full, to fill and even dome a little in the crust. So you'll need 1 cup of coarsely chopped pecans, 1.5 tablespoons of all-purpose flour, 2/3 cup of granulated sugar, 9 tablespoons, that's 1 stick, plus 1 tablespoon of unsalted butter at room temperature, 1 large egg, 1 large egg white, 1 tablespoon of brandy, this is optional, 1.5 teaspoons of finely grated orange zest, 1/2 to 1 cup of whole fresh cranberries, 1 great unshrinkable sweet tart shell, baked and cooled, powdered sugar for dusting. For the pecan filling, you'll need finely grind the pecans and flour in a processor. You're going to mix in the sugar and then butter, orange zest, and brandy if you're using it, and then blend until smooth. Mix in egg and egg white. Transfer the filling to a medium bowl. Cover and chill at least 3 hours. It can be made 2 days ahead, and keep it chilled. You're going to position the rack in the center of the oven and preheat to 350 degrees Fahrenheit. Spread the pecan filling evenly in the baked tart crust. Arrange the cranberries on top. Use the smaller amount for a sparsely cranberry tart like you see in these pictures, or use the larger amount if you, like us, really like things extra tart. You're going to bake the tart until it's golden and a tester inserted into the center of the filling comes out clean. This will be about 44 to 55 minutes. Cool the tart in the pan on a rack. Push the pan button up, releasing the tart from the pan. It can be made 8 hours ahead and then you can let it stand at room temperature. You can cut the tart into wedges and sprinkle with powdered sugar if desired and serve. As far as doing ahead, the tart dough can be made and wrapped twice and kept in the fridge for a few days or in the freezer for a week or two. The baked pastry shell, once cool, can be covered in foil and kept at room temperature for up to 2 days. Frangipane can be made up to 3 days in advance and kept in the fridge until ready to fill the shell. Our next recipe is for blackberry cheesecake galette. That was close. We almost went half the summer without a new pie recipe. I do solemnly swear to never let that happen. Common cooking theory goes that galettes are a lazy person's pie, except one person's lazy might just be another person having life priorities that do not include lattice weaving. I'm just saying. Galettes don't need to throw shade to be awesome. There are no frills, no fuss, and you cannot mess them up. Leaky? No. Pretty? Lopsided? You mean inviting. Barely sweet? Breakfast. But if there could be a singular limitation of galettes, it's volume. Because they're baked flat on a sheet, you can't fill them with too much of anything. They are not a cup. They cannot hold water. However, When working the kinks out of a cookbook recipe this spring, I realized that if you take your galette and drape it inside anything with walls, like a pie plate, a cake pan, a tart pan, anything, you create just enough wall that you can pour in a slightly messier filling and have a good chance of your galette holding on to it through the baking time. Doesn't that just make it a pie, Deb? You might ask. But you're still skipping the trimming, the crimping, the par baking, and the lid having noise, so yes, you are still coming out ahead. So make a galette that could hold a little more volume freed me to make the cheesecake galette that I have always wanted. What you haven't spent years pining after, a cheesecake galette? You see, cheesecake too requires a bit of investment. Ground cookies crust, several blocks of cream cheese, the dreaded water bath, and a long baking time. That's a big undertaking at any time of the year, but basically madness to consider in the midst of a July heat dome. The cheesecake galette is at once a berry pie, an easy galette, and a humble wedge of cheesecake, which makes that it's basically one scoop of ice cream short of making all of our summer dessert hopes and dreams come true. Looks beautiful in the photos. This post should end right here, but a funnier thing happened when we tried this. It tastes spectacularly like a giant, buttery, flaky cheese Danish. So it was already a pie, galette, and cheesecake. Now wants to show up for brunch, too. I say we let it. Here's the recipe for blackberry cheesecake galette. Serves 8 and takes 1 hour and 30 minutes. This uses a small amount of blackberries, a sprinkling throughout the cheesecake. We like the level, but it could be easily increased to 1.5 cups. It's not essential that you chop and macerate them a little, but I did so to get more of a jammy swirliness and not just dots of berries throughout. You could use any other berry or chopped fruit, of course. Blackberries were simply what looked best at the market this week. And also someone emailed me recently asking for more blackberry recipes, and I aim to please. You'll need the lime zest after the lime juice, but do yourself a favor and zest what you need first, or suffer the bad mood that comes from doing it in the other order. For the pastry, you'll need 1.25 cups of all-purpose flour, 1/2 teaspoon of fine sea or table salt, 1.5 teaspoons of granulated sugar, 8 tablespoons, and that's 4 ounces or 113 grams of cold unsalted butter cut into pieces, 1/4 cup of yogurt or sour cream, 3 to 4 tablespoons of cold water. For the filling, you'll need 1 cup of blackberries halved, that's about 4.25 ounces, 1/2 cup sugar divided, a squeeze of lime juice, 1 teaspoon of cornstarch, 1 8-ounce package of cream cheese softened, 1 large egg plus 1 large egg white. You'll use the yolk in a minute. A few scrapings from about 1/4 of a lime of lime zest, 1/2 teaspoon of vanilla extract, pinch of salt. And to finish, you'll need 1 egg yolk beaten, 1/2 teaspoon water, 1 heaped teaspoon of turbinado or coarse sugar for sprinkling, and 1 tablespoon of chopped pistachios. These are optional. To make the pastry, you're going to stir the flour, sugar, and salt together in a large bowl and sprinkle the butter over the dough and, using a pastry blender or your fingertips, work it into the flour until the mixture resembles coarse meal with the biggest pieces of butter the size of tiny peas. Sprinkle sour cream and 3 tablespoons of water over the mixture and stir it to combine, and it should form large clumps. Transfer the clumps of dough into a piece of plastic or wax paper and pat into a ball. Wrap into a packet and refrigerate for 1 hour or up to 2 days, or you can hasten the firming process along in the freezer for about 20 minutes. Meanwhile, make the filling. In a small bowl, you're going to combine the blackberries, 1 tablespoon of the sugar, a squeeze of lime juice, and cornstarch, stir and set aside. In a medium bowl, beat the cream cheese with a whole egg and egg white until light and fluffy. Beat in 7 tablespoons of the remaining sugar, zest, vanilla, and a pinch of salt. You're going to assemble the galette. You're going to heat the oven at 350 degrees Fahrenheit. Coat a 9-inch cake pan, springform or standard pie dish, or 9-inch removable bottom tart pan, or a plain pastry ring on a larger baking sheet. Coat them with nonstick spray and place on a baking sheet. Line the bottom with a circle of parchment paper for extra security. On a floured counter, you're going to roll the chilled dough into a large, about 12 to 14 inch circle. If your kitchen is very warm and it's softening too quickly, stick it in the freezer for a couple of minutes at any point to make it easier to work with. Carefully drape the dough in the prepared pan and let the edges hang down the sides. You're going to pour in the cream cheese batter and then spoon the blackberry mixture and any juices that have puddled in the bowl over the cream cheese in dollops. You can use a toothpick to lightly swirl them together. Be careful not to poke through the bottom of the dough, though. Gently lift the dough's overhang and pinch it into loose creases. You're going to want to do this in the air, hovering over the filling and not by pressing down on it, of course, because the filling is liquid. Then gently, loosely lay the creases down over the filling and repeat all around. Do not fuss over getting the creases or any part of this pretty. It will be no matter what. Combine the egg yolk and water in a small dish and gently dab over the outside of the crust with a brush. Because the filling under is a liquid, here too, do not strive for perfection. Just sprinkle the crust with some coarse sugar and sprinkle the whole tart, the filling, and the crust with chopped pistachios if desired. Next, you're going to bake the galette for 35 minutes or until a tester inserted into the cheesecake portion comes out batter-free. Let cool in a pan on a rack. I move it right to the fridge because cheesecake is best cold. Once it's fully cold, it can be unmolded from a springform tart pan or pastry ring or loosened easily from a pie pan, and then you can transfer it to a serving plate. Cut into wedges and don't forget to share. Our next recipe is for chocolate budinot. This serves 8 small servings, time 15 minutes of active cooking plus time to chill. Source, Smitten Kitchen, but inspired by the version at the late Barbudo restaurant. Please note, these photos show a halved recipe which yielded 6 tiny espresso cups of budino, which is luxe chocolate pudding. Perfect for a weekday treat for us, but probably too outrageously tiny for normal people. The recipe below is for a full yield, which makes 8 1/4 to 1/3 cup servings. The budino is rich with dark chocolate and intense. Should you find it too intense for your taste, you can replace half the chocolate with milk chocolate. You should not, however, skip the whipped cream. It's just not the same without it. And finally, here are some recipes to use up those extra egg whites and a classic American-style chocolate pudding if your tastes run less rich. And while we're at it, a luxe butterscotch pudding budino inspired by a different restaurant's famous version should your tastes run chocolate-free. The links to those recipes are at smittenkitchen.com. You're going to need 5 large egg yolks, 1/3 cup of granulated sugar, 2 cups of heavy cream, plus another half cup for making whipped cream, 8 ounces of semi-sweet chocolate, 60% range is perfect here, finely chopped, 2 teaspoons of unsalted butter, 2 pinches of sea salt, 1/4 teaspoon of vanilla extract, 2 teaspoons of bourbon, brandy, or another liqueur. This is optional. In the bottom of a medium-sized saucepan, you're going to whisk the egg yolks with granulated sugar until fully combined. Slow drizzle in 2 cups of cream, whisking the whole time. Warm the mixture over medium-low heat, stirring frequently until it is thick enough that it coats a spoon. Do not let it simmer or boil. Place the chopped chocolate in the bottom of a large bowl and set a fine mesh strainer over it. Pour the egg yolk mixture through the strainer onto the chocolate. Remove the strainer and stir. The heat of the egg yolk mixture should melt the chocolate. You're going to add butter, salt, and vanilla and mix until the butter is melted and combined. Divide between small cups. You'll have about 2.5 to 2 2/3 cups of Budino mixture total, and chill until fully cold and set. Either right before you serve it or when the chill is off the custard enough so that it won't melt the cream, whip the remaining 1/2 cup of heavy cream to very soft peaks and spoon generously over each cup. Serve cold with strong coffee and your favorite biscotti. And there's a recipe for the biscotti at smittenkitchen.com, and you can just search for chocolate Budino, Budino. Thank you for joining us for Food and Stuff, read by Gretchen Miller.
If you enjoyed this program, please register for our free services at www.aftersight.org or by calling 303-786-7777.